Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Silver and Black Today. Your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
I don't feel the shoulder at all. I've been doing heavy reps all summer, multiple reps, and I haven't felt it at all. So for the most part, this is the best my body is. I'm lighter than I was last year and everything. So.
The hot young man from last year, Josh Jacobs, Raiders running back today, talking to the media. Question about that shoulder, that fractured shoulder. And he says it's fine. He feels good. He's lighter, Q. Really good to hear from Josh Jacobs today that he is A-OK when it comes to the health.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he's a key to the offense. I mean, he really is. You saw what he was able to do his rookie year. But the biggest thing that he wasn't able to do his rookie year was complete it. That's right. The biggest thing. You've got to have Josh Jacobs for the full 16 games. So his shoulder is healthy. He's a little bit lighter. He knows what life in the NFL is like. He knows how to take care of his body, or you would assume that he knows how to take care of his body a little bit better. There was a few times in 2019 when he would finish runs a little bit harder, and he even mentioned, he said that, hey, I'm young. I can still do what I want to do and just kind of throw my body around there. I think now after feeling the results of a full season, he kind of realizes that, hey, I got to pick and choose my battles wisely.
I tell you what, man, just you, obviously we're not in the same room, but because we're on Zoom, but listening to him today and the humble nature of Josh Jacobs, it just continues to show you why it was such a great pick, not only from the talent and the football wise, but as a human being. And I love this. We wrote a story. You can check it out up on silverandblacktoday.com right now. But we talked to Josh Jacobs, too, about last season. He was asked, hey, you know, looking at last year, how did you think you did? And here's what he said.
I would grade it, I would say a B. It's a lot of yards that I feel like that I left on the table. And it's a lot of plays that I feel like I could have contributed more if I necessarily knew that I could do it or necessarily knew how to do it the correct way. So that's probably the biggest thing.
So 1,145 yards, Q, and he says he gave himself a B.
You know what? I don't disagree with him. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some things that he could have done better. I go back to that Chicago Bears game. You know, I go back to some games where he put the ball on the ground. You know, there was a game where I forget what game it was, but he lost the ball down by the end zone, you know, by the goal line, just trying to get some extra yards. So there were some things here and there that he could have done better. His blocking could have been a little bit better, and he could have been more involved in the passing game. And a lot of that has to do with being on the field in those situations.
No doubt about it. And I just like that. It just shows you that, hey, he knows he has to finish. Like you said, mm-hmm. Q, he's got to finish. He's got to stay healthy. He said he was lighter and that his shoulder felt good. He's doing reps all summer. And the one thing you just mentioned was something John Gruden mentioned last week about where Jacobs needed to improve, and that was in route running and his receiving game. And he talked about that as well.
I worked on a lot of things that receivers do, not necessarily just running back routes, whether it's getting off the line or how to stack on top once you get a vertical or anything like that. I've just been working on all the little technical things that receivers do, you know, just trying to implement that into my own style and bring what I can to the table.
So Q, a little glimpse there into what we have been saying all offseason, which is we're going to see some interesting packages, including lining up Josh Jacobs outside and stacking him up and using him as a receiver.
Yeah, and you know, that's going to be an exciting thing to see because he was a really good receiver at Alabama. He did a lot of good things in the passing game, and that was just one of the ways that they implemented him and put him into the offense. And so he was able to do that. So I know that that's part of his repertoire. You know, that's one of the tools he has on his tool belt. He's just got to be used. And John Gruden's got to have the confidence to be calling his number when it comes to the passing game. So if he can do that and get a little bit of a Christian McCaffrey type things into his game, that's exciting for a guy that you know that can get it done on the ground, get it done through the air as well.
Absolutely. We'll hear a little more from Josh Jacobs in a bit, as well as Tyrell Williams. In fact, our debate question, which you can also take part in if you just go to our my page up on Cited.co or on the Cited app, we asked the question, will Tyrell Williams play a whole season this year? Of course, he had plantar fasciitis in both feet, and he talked about that today, so we'll play that sound. But go chime in on the debate. Let us know what you think. Now, Q, you can't see it, but Chris Chapman, our engineer here at the station at Raider Nation Radio, and Raider Nation out there, he's a good guy, so don't give him any crap. But our next guest, I only say that because our next guest is coming on to talk about the Jets, and Chris has got a Jets hat and a Jets shirt on. That's his team, right? So bringing on now.
He's not just trying to match like an outfit with his shoes or something.
He's not, but it's a perfect segue because we bring in now Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential. Dan, thanks for joining us here on Raider Nation Radio, where our engineer is a Jets fan.
You know, was that the guy I was just talking to?
Yes.
Oh, I should have been more open and polite with him. I was very abrupt. We went right to I should have talked to him for 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know, you East Coast guys, that's how you do things. It's okay. It's all right. We love
well,
you.
Well, I didn't know. What do you want me to do?
I love it, Dan. Well, listen, let's talk Jets. Now, the Jamal Adams issue has been resolved. The Jets traded him off to Seattle. I think did a good job. Joe Douglas did in his first draft nabbing. One of the guys that I loved, Dan, was Bryce Hall. So you get Bryce Hall, that injury, he falls a little bit in the draft. But going in, they had the three big needs, the Jets, the offensive line, wide receiver, and cornerback. How'd they do, and how did the Jets look going into this weirdest of weird training camps?
Well, corner is still a need, as is edge rusher. But, you know, this is Joe Douglas is finishing up his first year as GM of the Jets. He took over around this time last year, very strange time to be adding a general manager in the summer. But after Mike Maccagnan, the prior GM, had run the draft and free agency, he was fired. He and Gase weren't getting along, Adam Gase. So they made the change. So this was Joe Douglas's first full offseason, his first draft. So there's no way he was going to be able to address all the needs. But you're right about Bryce Hall. That's a great observation by you, because corner was one of their biggest needs. And granted, they waited till the fifth round to address it, but he's a guy that could easily, I won't say first round necessarily, because I don't know if he would have run that great as far as lighting it up with the 40. But aside from that, he's a very good player. So they got a guy who, to me, who's a second round value in Bryce Hall in the fifth round. They really need him to emerge as a starter. But he's coming off that broken leg, so I don't know if it'll happen this year, but I wouldn't be shocked if he emerges as a starter in 2021.
One guy that's been there, he was a free agent pickup. He got a pretty big name. That's Le'Veon Bell. He had an okay season with the Jets last season, but he's been talking a lot. He's talking about he's in shape, talking about he's fired up for this upcoming season. What are Jet fans, and what are you expecting from Le'Veon Bell in 2020?
Well, he's a good guy to bring up today, because there's been a lot of Le'Veon Bell talk here in New York and New Jersey, because Adam Gase had a press conference today, and it seemed like half the questions were about Le'Veon Bell, and that was probably because the media knew Le'Veon Bell was going to be doing a Zoom conference call right after the coach. So you're going to be seeing a lot of Le'Veon Bell articles and interviews over the next couple of days coming out of this market. The issue with Le'Veon Bell last year, clearly their offensive line wasn't very good, so that hurt his ability to have a big season with poor blocking in front of him. But also, and I wrote about this today for my website, one of the other problems with Le'Veon Bell last year was that he skipped his first off-season program with a new team. He signed in March and then did not participate in OTAs and minicamps. He went to the one veteran mandatory minicamp that you get fined for not attending. But aside from that, he missed all the spring practices. And I've been covering the NFL a long time. I can't remember a player who just signed with a new team who didn't participate in that offseason program. Tom Brady last year with the Patriots. He didn't participate, but he was like, 17 years into that offense. So I just think that set Le'Veon Bell back last year. People don't bring that up, but he could have really absorbed the playbook, got comfortable in the passing game, catching passes from Sam Darnold in the spring, a lot of timing involved in that, and also work with his offensive line. So I think that's one of the reasons he got out of the gate slowly last year. But now he knows the offense. He's comfortable in the system. So I think it is a possibility for him to have a huge year this year. Still very, very talented.
Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential, longtime NFL writer, joining us here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920. And Dan, let's face it, you know, the NFL, quarterback-driven league, Sam Darnold has had some really good moments, and many are kind of expecting to see him make that next jump. What's your view of his development? He certainly got better last year, but has he gotten as good as people think he can be? And is this really the big year for him to show the Jets that he can do it?
Yeah, this is a huge year for Sam Darnold. You know, that third year. Bill Parcells always used to say that going from that second to third year, you find out so much about players, whether they're going to make it or not. So Sam Darnold was okay last year, not great. I would describe his rookie year the same way. He needs to take that next step. It seems like he's one of those guys over the course of his first 2 years that beat average to below average teams, but did not beat, let's use a college analogy, didn't beat the SEC teams, but beat the Sun Belt teams. You know what I'm saying? So he needs to show he can beat the elite defenses and the elite teams. And they reworked the offensive line to help him out this offseason, including the first-round pick, Mekhi Becton, who comes in out of Louisville, will likely start at left tackle, and George Fant, former Western Kentucky basketball player, who played for the Seahawks the last few years, who's probably going to play right tackle. A bunch of interior players were added as well. So they rebuilt the offensive line to protect him better, but he needs to take that next step himself in terms of reading defenses and going through his progressions. Like a lot of young quarterbacks, too often he locked on his first read.
The Jets brought in a weapon for him in the second round. They were able to draft Denzel Mims, the wide receiver out of Baylor. How important is it going to be for him and Sam Darnold to be on the same page early and often? And is he going to be expected to be a number one guy, like, right out the chutes?
Yeah, he's one of the rookies that has the biggest challenge on the Jets roster, because that position is so hard for rookies, because when he played at Baylor, they had a very small route tree. So he's got to learn how to run a lot more routes than he was running at Baylor. And also, they didn't really have a very thick playbook, very simple offense. He also was a guy that had trouble getting off jams. So I think he's going to be very good in time. He's got an exotic size-speed ratio, 6'3", 210, runs under 4'4". He's got all that going on. He'll climb the ladder and beat defensive backs on high point passes, but must expand the route tree and must improve his route running and must do a better job getting off the line. So I don't know if he's going to be instant coffee in September, especially with no off-season program. I think he'll be very good in time, but I think early on it could be rough sledding for him.
Well, and Dan, before we let you go, I mean, you look at the AFC East. I think you're using the old Twain-ism about Tale of My Demise being greatly exaggerated. You know, everybody's kind of writing off the Patriots that they're on the descension. Out here in the AFC West, the Chiefs are on an ascension where some people think that they might be quote-unquote dynasty. I don't like to use that word. But the AFC East is changing dramatically now with what's happened in New England. You have Buffalo that has surged and has done a lot better than they have in previous years. And then you have the Jets making better moves finally. How do you look at this division shaking out, and what does it look like over the next 2-3 years?
Well, it's absolutely embarrassing for the other teams in the division that New England won this division 11 years in a row. I mean, give me a break. We're talking about a league that's built on parity and competitive balance. And I know Tom Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and Bill Belichick, one of the greatest head coaches of all time. But come on, 11 years in a row. So to me, you look at this year, and you could throw a blanket over this whole division. I could see any four of the teams winning division and any four of the teams, you know, having a chance to finish in last place. I think it's really, really balanced. And I think the Jets have a chance to win the division just like any other team. We're talking about Denzel Mims before. A couple other things you talk about with this offense, which could make it very good, aside from Le'Veon Bell being in tremendous shape, and they're going to feature him more in the passing game this year. He's one of the best receiving backs of the modern era. So a better Le'Veon Bell this year. Jamison Crowder is one of the best slot receivers in football. And even though the Jets had a bad year last year, he had a really good first year. And keep an eye on this guy, an emerging star at the tight end position, Chris Herndon out of Miami of Florida, who had a really good rookie year in 2018, and last year had a suspension, and then he had an injury, so it was a washout season. Really, really good tight end. Can stretch the seam, is an excellent blocker. You're going to see this guy really emerge this year if he stays healthy. So they have some weapons on offense. On defense, once again, some question marks with the edge rush and the cornerback position, but Greg Williams, pretty good coordinator. He should be able to have them play very good team defense. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Jets win the division, and I wouldn't be shocked if they finish in last place. This division is wide open.
Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential. Dan, thank you so much for spending the time with us. We will talk to you again prior to week 13 in early December when the Raiders come out to play at MetLife Stadium. Thanks, my friend, and have a great day.
Anytime, guys. It's so exciting to come on in Las Vegas with an NFL team there now. It's like it was a landmark interview for me to be able to come on with in Las Vegas with a team there now. That's so awesome.
Well, we appreciate it, Dan. Best of luck, Dad. See you soon. All right, Dan Leberfeld from Jets Confidential. And Q, yeah, the Jets, you know, the Jets have been a meme and they've been all this kind of stuff. Adam Gase with the eyes, the psycho eyes and all that kind of stuff. But
they're not winning the division.
No,
not at all.
I don't think so either. I think it's Buffalo and New England's going to sneak up on people. I'm a Cam Newton fan, so I think he's going to have.
Really?
I am, yeah.
What has he done in the last 2 years?
I don't know. Maybe it's just the endless potential and the dream of Cam Newton being Superman. I don't know what it is, but we'll see. But I think that the Jets, though, if I'm a Jets fan for the first time in a long time, at least it looks promising. They're not even close to being there, I don't think, in my view. But at least they're starting to make moves that don't make you scratch your head and say, what the hell are they doing?
Right. No, that makes sense. But Sam Darnold is still a question. Adam Gase is a question.
Oh, yeah.
One of my biggest questions when it comes to the Jets is Adam Gase.
Yeah.
Is he going to be there next year when they have all those draft picks that they acquired from Jamal Adams' trade? I really highly doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be very good this year, and I think that Adam Gase will be shown the door.
All right. What do you guys think? Also, we're going to take your call, 702-365-9200. Don't forget, coming up at 4 o'clock, top of the hour, Vinny Bonsignor. He'll roll in here fresh off of coming from the Raiders facility out at practice, give you all the updates on that as well. So our sided debate today, our debate, Raider Nation debate, was about Terrell Williams, right? So the wide receiver who came in last year where everybody was excited to get a guy in who wasn't a true number one, but definitely an upgrade. Great and a good number two, a guy that did well with the Chargers and showed some flashes of brilliance, comes in and can't stay healthy, right? So we talked to Terrell Williams today, the media did, and they asked him about his feet, Q, and if he was healthy.
Yeah, it took a while. It took a pretty long time into the offseason to finally start feeling better. You know, with the virus and stuff, I was able to even take more time, which was really helpful. But now, you know, I don't want to go back to that. So, yeah, I do a lot of daily maintenance stuff before and after practice just to make sure that that doesn't come back. Just trying to find different ways, different things. I don't know what it was that finally got me over the hump, but I tried a million different things, and now I'm just trying to continue to add stuff, whatever feels good, however I can keep it that way into the next day and keep the soreness and all that stuff away. So, honestly, I don't really know what it was that got me over that hump, but I'm just glad to.
So, Q, this wide receiver core, we've been talking a lot about it this week, has got a lot of talent. But in my view, and tell me if I'm wrong here, because I know you will, I think Williams is a key, because I think having that veteran on a young roster, having that guy you know who's going to be sure-handed and be out there at that number two spot is really important for this team, because the young guys might struggle a little bit. Ruggs, you know, you're going to count on him maybe from day one, but he might take a little time to develop. So to me, getting Terrell Williams on that field, getting him to be what we know he can be and stay healthy is important for this offense.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And really, Tyrell Williams has to do everything he can to stay on the field. This was my thoughts about, I don't know, 6 months ago, that he was going to come back and he was going to be the dude, at least for this year, and then, you know, pass the torch on to Bryan Edwards. But from everything I've heard, and we could ask Vinny when he steps into the studio in a little bit, I feel like Bryan Edwards is really trying to make a push to get onto the field early and stay on the field. He sounds like one of those guys that once you allow him in the building or you give him that little bit of a crack, that little opening, he's going to take it and run with it. So Tyrell Williams wants to stick around for quite a while with the silver and black. He's going to have to be healthy. He's going to have to stay on the field, and he's going to have to be productive. That means his feet have got to be right, and his hands have got to be right, because at the end of last season, his hands were a little suspect as well.
No doubt about it. And you have to think, too, that if Edwards does come out and just blow doors, right, and has an amazing camp, whatever that means these days, because we just don't know, and really starts to push him, does that change the whole dynamic? You know, you have yep. Tyrell Williams. This is the last year of guaranteed money. And in a strange year where somebody might go out with an injury or go out with the virus or whatever, could he then be someone available if Bryan Edwards does that well, where the Raiders are able to recoup that and ship him off? That could happen. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, if Bryan Edwards is as good or can be as good as everybody thinks he can be, that could happen. What do you think, Raider Nation? 702-365-9200 as well. And Q, we're going to also visit at the bottom of the hour. Oh, no, I got some more Tyrell Williams I want to play here too. I asked him a question, because we're talking about these wide receivers, right? You're talking about Ruggs. You're talking about Williams. You're talking about Edwards. You're talking about even Lynn Bowden, who could be used in that spot, and then the cast of characters behind them. What kind of dynamic is happening with that group, right? What kind of identity? I asked him about identity. He mentioned it earlier in a question, saying that, you know, we have this identity. So I asked, what is that? What's the personality of this wide receiver group?
Just as far as like a receiver group, you know, I think our identity is we're really young. We got a lot of young guys, and me and Nelly being the two oldest in the room, and I still think we're pretty relatively young in the NFL. So just having that, and just guys are excited to be here, guys are excited to get on the field, and it just feels a lot more loose. You know, I feel like last year, the room that we had, it just wasn't, you know, we just couldn't be ourselves, couldn't really enjoy, and couldn't really settle in. But now I feel like guys are really good friends. We like being around each other, and we like to see each other be successful. So it's easy to come to work, and it's easy to be around those guys, and I think we're going to have a great year. I'm excited to be around them.
And Q, he mentioned Nelly there. Nelson Aguilar also had a press conference today. We didn't bring you sound from that one. But those two are the most experienced guys. Aguilar today said, too, that they asked him about returning kicks. He hasn't done it since college, but he said he's willing to do what he needs to do to help this team win. So interesting there that, look, those are the two oldest guys. And then behind them, who do you got? I mean, yeah, you got some of the guys like Zay Jones and all that. But as far as front line guys that are going to see time on the field, you are very young.
Yeah, no, you really are. And it's a good thing. You know, the Raiders for a long time, and John Gruden in particular, has always been, oh, he loves veterans. He loves the older guys. You know, when he went out and signed Jordy Nelson from Green Bay, you know, it's just like, it's about time that they got some youth on the squad. It's about time that you could see, this goes back to Therese Paylor's conversation he had with us yesterday on the show. You can see why these guys are being signed. You can see the blueprint. You can see that these pieces are starting to make sense. And so having these young guys let you know that they have a future, they have a building blocks for this team, and that's something that they really need. And, you know, Tyrell Williams, he could be a guy that could be a big-time player for the team, but again, he's got to be able to be healthy, and he's got to be productive, because there's a young bull that's right behind him that's ready to get onto the field and make some noise themselves.
Yeah, that it's amazing how that seems to motivate people when someone's behind
yeah.
you. Push it, but it's a good thing. Pushing is a good thing. You get the best out of both athletes, in my view. But anything else strike you today about the comments you heard from Jacobs or Williams or Aguilar or Gruden? I didn't see anything surprising. I did see Gruden. They asked Gruden about Max Crosby, about the testing positive and all that stuff, and he kind of just shoot it off and said, look, you know, we're hoping he's going to be back soon. But we did see statistics today, Q, from the NFL, that the rate of infected players and infected employees continues to stay low, below 1%. And in the case of the players, it's about 0.5%. So, and of those that have tested positive, knock on wood, no one has had any serious illness. So you like to see that, because to get these guys on the field to make sure the season goes off uninterrupted, you got to keep that stuff going. And we heard from Carl Nassib earlier that, hey, he thinks he's safer at the facility than when he goes outside. And I'm sure that's true.
That is the absolute truth. You know, while they're in the facility, that's the best place for them to be. It's when they get out on their own and they start roaming around town and maybe they, you know, go out to eat or whatever their scenario is after they leave the facility is when they really put themselves and their, you know, family members in danger. Being at the facility where you know everybody's being tested and you know everything is being very cautious and everyone's being cautious, that's a great place to be. So, yeah, I agree 100%.
All right, we're going to take your phone call, 702-365-9200. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to finish out the show with a marathon. We're going to do two things. We're going to bring on Nate Geary from WGR 550 in Buffalo to preview week four against the Bills. So we're staying in New York. We're just going up towards the lake a little bit. We're going to talk to him about that. And then we're also going to get the Q-tip because everybody's ears are itching for a little Q. You're listening to Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today, here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Bass, bass, snare. All right, you're back.
You're trying to be musical, man. What's really going on?
I got that. I'm trying to do it, man. I haven't picked up, you know, this whole COVID stuff. We have all this time, right? We're bored. We're stuck at home, all that. And I haven't played guitar, dude. I have my guitars, and I love playing guitar. And I've been so busy with this show and the ramp up to the launch of Raider Nation Radio. I haven't even picked it up. And I feel like I lost 5 months of becoming a better guitar player.
Well, good for you that you know how to play guitar.
Barely.
I don't, but I can tell you, I have a couple old school neighbors that used to be my neighbors back in the day when I was a young buck that they were really good on the guitar. They were really good. They had their own little band in their garage. Michael and Brian, I can introduce you guys and you guys can create your own band.
We can do that COVID jamming, which I've loved seeing these acts. I sent you one last week with the old school hip hop where they're doing them virtually. I love that stuff, man.
Right. No, that is pretty cool. At least get creative, right?
Yeah. Well, and they can't go out and make money right now. So you're a creator. You're an artist. You have to make art, right? So that's what these guys were doing, which is cool. All right. So our debate today was wide receiver Terrell Williams will play a full season in the Raiders for the Raiders in 2020. Yes or no? 75% say yes. They think he's going to stay healthy. Maybe they heard the comments from today. So thanks for taking part in our poll, our Raider Nation debate, which you can find. We tweet that out every day. So look at our Twitter handle, and you can take part in that, too. And we read.
You know what a good question would be?
What's that?
Is that at some point, will Bryan Edwards be a starter?
Ah, I like it. Well, luckily, Q, we do these every day. So.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Right. Although I'm like, we're out of the house right now staying at a hotel because we're doing some remodeling, and so figuring out dinner becomes like a trying to figure out the quadratic equation, and so I'm almost like I'm gonna put this up on Sided and just let people pick for me what we're gonna have for dinner, although that could be dangerous. Nonetheless, listen, we are glad you're with us here on Raider Nation Radio, and with Q and Scott here, and the Q-tip's coming up in a minute, but first we're going to shuffle off to Buffalo, and we're going to talk about Buffalo Bills football. And it's they're one of those teams, Q. Like, I've always been a Josh Allen fan, like maybe because he came out of the Mountain West and I got a little bit of that bias, complete with all his weaknesses and all that stuff. So I like to see him succeed, and they're a fun team to watch.
No, they are, and they're expected to be really, really good this year. I mean, I expect them to win that division. You know, we were talking Jets earlier, but I really expect the Bills to take that next step, especially now that they've acquired Stephon Diggs. I think that that's going to be a big deal. That's a big deal, matter of fact, on the field and in the locker room.
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, that's why we're doing this, right, Q? We're doing this. Hey, look, we're going to preview the opponents of the Raiders so you have a sense for where they're at, and the Bills are next.
Right, exactly. And to help us do that is my guy, Nate Geary, WGR 550 Radio in Buffalo. Nate, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And we were just talking about the expectation of the Bills. We think that they're going to be a really, really good team in 2020. Just initially, looking at the roster, looking at the head coach who got a contract extension, by the way, what is the gut feeling of Bills fans about this 2020 team?
Yeah, thanks, guys, for having me. Obviously, expectations are at an all-time high. You know, Q, I think I've told you this before in the past. This is the first year that Tom Brady isn't sort of dwelling over the division for basically the last decade, two decades, really. So, you know, we're sitting in a place that, you know, I think for the most part, Bills fans are incredibly enthused about what's to come. But more importantly, I think the conversation always ultimately ends up shifting towards Josh Allen, right? Like, how does Josh Allen's steps in year three indicate that, or in year two, how are those going to translate into year three? And, you know, you guys were talking about the Jets. You know, there are similar expectations and frankly, pressure on the Jets quarterback, Sam Darnold, who was taken ahead of Josh Allen in that draft. So, yeah, expectations are high, but I think most people outside of Buffalo, inside of Buffalo, pretty much anywhere you talk, when you talk Bills, it is centered around Josh Allen and sort of what are we to expect this year, him being in, and what you guys talking about with Stephon Diggs, a year that he's now surrounded with a supporting cast that's fit with one of the top supporting casts in the AFC. So, yeah, I mean, high expectations, but I think we all know this ship is going as far as Josh Allen can take it.
Nate Skocel-Branson here on Silver and Black today. Thanks, and it's good to meet you over the interwebs here. But Stephon Diggs, you talk about him. How excited, number one, is Bills Mafia about him? And number two, how has he changed the mood within that locker room, especially for that offense coming over from the Vikings?
Yeah, I think with Diggs, you know, he brings this sense of legitimacy. And, you know, I'm going to throw a name out there, Eric Moulds. And this is probably, Stephon Diggs is probably the best receiver in his prime to play on this Bills roster since Eric Moulds. And, you know, Stevie Johnson sort of has a special place in my heart. You know, he was kind of the de facto number one wide receiver, you know, as I was sort of really falling in love with the Bills. You know, back in high school and the beginning of my college. And one of the things that I kind of look back about it, and some people even say Terrell Owens, but Terrell Owens was here for a year. It was really a publicity stunt, and he was in the twilight of his career. So, like, it's hard to really measure what the addition of Stephon Diggs does from an on-the-field perspective until we really see him, right? But I think there is a level of understanding now that when you look at the Bills' top three receivers, and Stephon Diggs being your number one outside receiver, John Brown being your sort of opposite number two receiver on the outside and sort of fitting Cole Beasley, who is pretty widely considered to be one of the better slot receivers in the league, you now basically add two of the top, I don't know, seven, eight route runners in football in Beasley and Diggs. You put them on the same roster, and now you've taken that bracketed coverage, that those double teams that John Brown was seeing last year as the team's number one receiver, and those are going to go away from John Brown. And John Brown's coming off a career year last year. And part of the thing that I think excites a lot of people is with the whole John Brown scenario is, you know, John Brown and Josh Allen simply did not connect in an efficient manner down the field. You add arguably the best down the field target in Stephon Diggs in the league, and now you're saying, well, you have two very legitimate nightmares for defensive coordinators to prepare for each week. So I really like it from a, you know, what he does. I think this is a really good way of putting it. It's the addition of Stephon Diggs slots John Brown and Cole Beasley into more appropriate positions as a number two and number three receiver. And I think that's going to do wonders for Josh Allen going into year three.
Talking all things Bills right now with Nate Geary from WGR 550 Radio in Buffalo. You can find him on Twitter at Nate Geary Sports. And Nate, last time we talked, Tre'Davious White was still thinking about opting in, opting out. Well, ultimately, he ended up opting in. He's not going to miss the 2020 season. Big time defensive back for the Bills. How does that solidify that secondary for Buffalo?
Yeah, big monkey off the back there. That was a 48-hour stretch that I know a lot of people here in Buffalo were basically holding our breaths. And it's not to say that, you know, one cornerback, especially in a Sean McDermott-led defense, is going to be the difference of, you know, however many wins, right? Like, is Tre'Davious White worth two wins a season? I would say maybe that's an overreaction. But I would say that Tre'Davious White is one of the best two or three corners in all of football. He does, for the most part, run that defensive secondary. Now, of course, he'll attribute a lot of his success to the guys behind him and Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, two of the most underrated safety tandems in the league. But without, you know, Tre'Davious White, this defense is the depth at the cornerback position is almost automatically tested. You know, we've got this battle that's set to ensue between Josh Norman and Levi Wallace, the incumbent starter last year at the second cornerback position. You know, Wallace is coming in a year more experienced, a little heavier. He gained 10 pounds in the offseason. As we know, Josh Norman's sort of trying to reclaim that 2015 form that, coincidentally, he had under Sean McDermott in Carolina as his defensive coordinator. So there is a lot to look at, and I think the most important thing here is that Tre'Davious White is here. He is playing, and an important season for him going into his fifth-year option next year. This isn't necessarily like a make-or-break season for Tre'Davious White, but this is the type of season that can solidify him as one of the league's top, most consistent corners, guys like Stephon Gilmore, who was a previous Buffalo Bill. And I think, you know, if you're Brandon Bean, you know, this season may not really be a make-or-break on what number you ultimately settle on, but, you know, in a contract year, essentially, for Trey White, the pressure's on, and I think he knew that, and I think he also, a lot of what he talked about, guys, was the safety of his family. He has a newborn. He's got at-risk grandparents. And one of the main things is he wanted to make sure that his family could be safe. And I'll never fault an NFL player or anybody during this current climate to say, hey, like, I need to make sure before I go back to work that my family is in a situation where they can be safe. I can do my job without having to worry about endangering my child or my wife or my grandparents or parents. So, with that being said, I think that what that indicated is the Bills did a good job leading up. The Bills were one of the very first teams to put their COVID strategy in place. And with, so far from players, we've heard nothing but great reviews about what the Bills have been doing to make sure they're easing some of the concerns these players have about playing football this fall.
Nate, it's Scott again. One of the guys that one of my dogs I loved in the draft, and I thought maybe the Raiders had a shot at getting him. That was running back Zach Moss out of Utah. What are the coaches there saying about him and the impression he's made in these off-season / workout / Zoom meetings?
Yeah, the running back room last year, guys, was almost renowned in how tight-knit they were. Frank Gore, obviously the savvy veteran, I believe future Hall of Famer, did a great job of sort of guiding Devin Singletary through his first season. Now you move on from Frank Gore, who, frankly, on the field hurt you in a lot of situations. I thought the Bills overly relied upon Frank Gore on the field. So I look at it this way, guys. If Devin Singletary has approximately the same number of touches next season that he did last year, I would expect that number to go up slightly only because at the beginning of the season, Singletary didn't get the snaps that he was getting towards the end of the season, and he missed a couple of games with a hamstring injury. So I do expect that the per-game average to look more like it did towards the end of the season, where he's getting 15 to 17 touches a game. That means there's likely 12 to 15 to even more touches per game available as the second running back, and that's really where I see Zach Moss slotting in. He's a guy that's picked up the offense from what we've heard from a lot of coaches and his teammate Devin Singletary very quickly. He's the kind of guy who's going to walk off the bus as a very NFL-ready pass blocker from a running back perspective. And, you know, that is, and I'm sure you guys know this, that's one of the things that, you know, an offensive coordinator worries about putting a rookie running back out on the field is, you know, can he protect your quarterback in a third down situation? He's fine if he's running downhill and he can make plays with the balls in his hand, but can he protect the quarterback? Can he make a play as a blocker in passing down sets? That's an important aspect to trusting rookie running backs. So I do think that he kind of walks off the bus as a guy who's ready to do that at the NFL level. And then, you know, I look at him from a pass catching perspective. One of the big concerns around Josh Allen's game is his lack of accuracy, or how about this, his lack of good accuracy metrics, and that's completion percentage, right? I mean, it's some 60% completion percentage. I think we all agree here in Buffalo that for this team and offense in particular to be successful, Josh Allen needs to get that completion percentage above 60%. A really easy way to do that is to, I mean, Josh Allen ranks 32nd in the league in checkdown percentage. So he's not a guy that's typically checking it down to his running back, giving his running back the opportunity, or even receivers or tight ends to get the ball to the line of scrimmage and sort of be a playmaker. I think now with Zach Moss's infusion in this offense, you have two legitimate young workhorse-type backs who bring different skill sets to the table, and I really like Moss and Singletary as a 1-2 punch. I think it'll be a formidable group going into the season.
Nate, final question for you, and it has to do with the head coach. I started off talking about the head coach getting an extension. Sean McDermott, 6-year extension. He's going to be there through the 2025 season. How big of a deal was that to get done with the head coach?
I think it's a really big deal, and obviously everyone's attention now turns to Brandon Bean, who both guys are essentially tied at the tip, or tied at the hip, I'm sorry. And, you know, what I'll say about Sean McDermott is, you know, the first, I would say this, the 2017 season was a frustrating one, his first season. The whole Tyrod Taylor situation, benching him for Nathan Peterman, but ultimately making the playoffs that season was really kind of a test of our will as a fan base, but regardless, they made the playoffs. And then last year, you saw what continuity, what the process that he continues to preach, and all the kind of hard work and roster turnover and dead cap space that this team ate over the last 3 years sort of come to fruition. And I know that I'm sure Sean McDermott uses this analogy, but the cream in this instance sort of rose to the top. And you're not going to find very many Bills fans at this point who can say very much negative about Sean McDermott in terms of what he does on the field, in the locker room, as a leader, as a spokesperson for the organization as a whole. This is an organization and an ownership group in Terry and Kim Pegula who frankly felt embarrassed about how about the ways that Rex Ryan represented the organization. They felt sort of duped. And, you know, one of the things that Sal Capaccio, our Bills beat reporter at WGR, mentioned today was an article that, you know, basically talked about how the Browns and John DePodesta had an opportunity and tried to push Jimmy Haslam to hire Sean McDermott the year they ultimately went with Hugh Jackson. Wow. And what that ultimately could have been is the Bills missing out on the opportunity to hire what is going down as arguably right now the second-best head coach in our franchise history. He's only 4 years into his campaign. So I'm really looking forward to the future with Sean McDermott. I know the players respect, love, and adore their coach, and that really is a sentiment that you hear not only in the media but in their play and dedication on the field. So I'm really looking forward. I think the Bills hit a home run with the hires of Sean McDermott and then subsequently Brandon Bean, and I'm really looking forward to the future with both of them at the helm.
Yeah, the future is definitely different, really bright, to say the least. That's great stuff right there. Nate Geary from WGR 550 Radio in Buffalo, talking all things Bills. You can find him on Twitter at Nate Geary Sports. Nate, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, man. Really good stuff. I appreciate you, and I'll be talking to you soon.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Q, as always, man, I appreciate it. Steve, great to meet you guys, and have a great show.
All right. That was Nate Geary. I love it, man. Buffalo. From everybody from media to fans to the parking meter guy, it's like
to the chicken wings.
The chicken, well, yeah, chicken wings go without saying.
Let's get serious. Let's get into important stuff, man.
But always good fans, always good people. They get along really well with Raider Nation, too. It's kind of strange, but it is what it is, and it's good to hear from him. So good stuff.
Blue collar cats.
Absolutely. Now, make sure you call in 702-365-9200. We'll get your calls in here before the top of the hour. But before we do that, fueled by another blueberry Dr. Jen's nutrition bar, he's all ready to go. It's the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
And what I want to focus on today is something that we heard and touched on a little bit yesterday on the show, but I kind of think it's worth talking about. And that's the fact that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 obviously pushing their football seasons to the spring. And so when we had Therese Paylor on, he was talking about the fact that he enjoyed what Seattle did when they gave up their draft picks to go and get Jamal Adams, knowing that they got a veteran and they know exactly what they're getting from him. So what I do is I take that information and I roll with that. And I say, Raider Nation, there is a guy who can get out to the quarterback in a major way that's still out there. He's unhappy with his team right now. He wants to be somewhere else. Why not, to the Raider Nation, why not Mike Mayock and John Gruden sit down in a room and think about reaching out to Jacksonville and saying, you know what? I don't know what this 2021 NFL draft is going to look like, but we're willing to give up our first-round draft pick for Unique Ngakoue. Add to that pass rush. You know, Charlie Casserly yesterday was talking about the pass rush is still a little bit suspect. Well, if you believe that, if you're the Raiders and you believe that, why not go ahead and try to make a move? Why not go ahead and try to go and establish a guy and get a guy in your organization that is an established pass rusher? And you know that, yes, he has a few issues when it comes to stopping the run, but you got guys that could do that. So I wouldn't have a problem right now going up and giving us your first-round draft pick and bringing in a guy like Yannick Ngakoue, knowing that you got a guy in Patrick Mahomes that you've got to get on the ground. The quarterback's got to go down, and he's got to go down hard. So why not go ahead and make it happen?
Right.
Pull the trigger on it, bring in a talent like that, and get it done.
Right, as Therese said, it's going to be a complete crapshoot next year.
Yep.
So why not? Now, we want to hear what you say. Would you trade those number one that number one draft pick for Ngakoue? Now that knowing that what next year is going to be like without college football and it might be a crapshoot. 702-365-9200. We're going to take another break. We got to take one more. We're going to come back and close with your call. Do you agree with Q? Would you do that? Let us know. 702-365-9200. Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
All right. So Q brought up in the Q-tip, which we had to interrupt with a break, so we apologize for that, but we talked a lot today, so we had to, you know how that goes, Q, you blow through
busy
breaks.
Busy day, man.
You blow through breaks, right, and then you got to make them up at the end?
Yep.
So we did that, but we asked the question, you brought it up, right? Recap the Q-tip for them.
Well, real simple. I mean, you know, would you be willing to give up a first-round draft pick for a talent like Yannick Ngakoue? You know, give up the potential to get a guy that you don't know what he is in the NFL for a guy that you do know what he is in the NFL?
Yeah, that's the question. So call us. We got a few minutes left. 702-365-9200. But before we go, and he's circling audio now for his show, but I'm going to get him to come on for just a couple minutes here. I told him that we were going long today, but I still want to get him on. There he is. Plug in. Bonsignor plugs it in and he's ready. Vinny.
Oh, what's going on? I had to take my mask off.
Okay.
Getting
real
so
quick,
used to it.
With a couple minutes left, yes. since the Raider fans are shy, they're waiting to call your show. Quick observations from practice.
Bryan Edwards jumps off the page, and in this case, the field, as big and physical as advertised. He has a presence about him. I saw him make a couple of really impressive catches today, faster than you would think that he might
for
be at that size. I think he looks the part. And in hearing people like, you know, John Gruden talk about him, we heard Derek Carr talk about him last week. Terrell Williams had some really nice things to say about him today. Nelson Aguilar had some tremendous compliments for him. Said, I haven't seen hands like that in a long, long time. You know, the ability to go up and get the ball. Trust me when I say, veterans don't just give it up to rookies. You have to earn it. And it's in short order. Bryan Edwards has earned a lot of praise from veteran players, and I think that really bodes well. Nothing against Henry Ruggs was playing with the starters today. He was lined up outside. For anyone who thought that he was going to start at slot over Hunter Renfrow, that's not happening. You know, so Henry's going to get his time. He's looks like he's got a starting job. But Bryan Edwards is making his presence
felt. He's the guy.
Felt.
He's the guy so far. Early on, but that's
early
good.
On. But hey, you know, well, you only it's a quick turnaround here.
That's why journalists are out there to watch this and report this to all of you. Make sure you tune into Vinny next at 4 o'clock. He's going to go in depth on what he saw at practice. So do not miss In the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor coming up next. Here we got one caller, Q, who wants to talk about your trade possibility. This is Mason.
Okay.
Mason on the Raider Nation Radio Hotline. What's up, Mason?
How's it going, guys? So addressing Yannick Ngakoue, if I was the Las Vegas Raiders, I would not make a move. The reason why is they have an assortment of salary cap devoted to that defensive end room. They just locked up Carl Nassib, who's guaranteed the next 2 years, minimum of 8.5, if I'm not mistaken.
So
Cleveland Farrell is getting a heavy paycheck.
Yeah.
And then Max Crosby has the other side pretty much locked down. So if you're going to trade a first-round pick, you're going to have to give Ngakoue a new contract.
All right, Mason.
He's going to want a long-term deal.
Mason, sorry to cut you off, man. We got your point. We're out of time. Good call. I appreciate that, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Q, I don't know that I agree with him. I get what he's saying, but if you had the deal, maybe it's a chance. All right, Q, I will talk to you tomorrow, my friend.
Peace out, brother. Vinny, have a great show.
Thank you, Q.
All right. You've been listening to Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio here at 920. Coming up next, In the Huddle.